The Minikheim Show is presented by Coors Light, the beer made to chill. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. As questions around Title IX's future once again swirl, some opportunities and athlete protections may be in jeopardy. 30 for 30 Podcasts, in association with ESPNW, presents Heavy Metals Inside the Karolyi Gymnastics Empire, a multi-part podcast series that takes a sweeping look at the influence of legendary USA Gymnastics coaches Bella and Martha Karolyi and the hidden culture of fear and intimidation at their Karolyi Ranch. Exposed to the world during the 2016 Larry Nassar scandal, this podcast takes a hard look at what can happen when athletes are not protected. 30 for 30 Podcasts and ESPNW's Heavy Metals Inside the Karolyi Gymnastics Empire launches July 14th on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome back to the Minikheim Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts thinks the best wide receiver in the NFC East is Terry McLaurin. Call some Scottish Terry or McLaurin. I am delighted to be just really, really terrible, really just not good at all. But someone who is very good at his job, much better than that joke, is Charles McDonald, who covers one of these teams, the New York Football Giants. Is that cool when people say football Giants, or do you think it's corny instead of just saying Giants?
I think it's kind of corny, but you know, well, Giants fans can be a little rabid. So if they think it's cool, then I think it's cool too.
We're off to a great start. That's Charles McDonald, who covers the Giants and the Jets for the New York Daily News. Having you on to talk about the Giants, because I talked about the Jets last week, and I actually didn't want a Jets beat reporter on to talk about the Jets. I wanted to give you a break. And Charles, I'm really excited to talk about the NFC East because, you know, before I started this exercise, and every week we're going division by division, and it's a good chance to kind of catch up on all the depth charts. There's always every team, there's a player where I'm like, huh, okay. I didn't see that signing or didn't like register with me necessarily. Like, for example, with the Eagles, I forgot Javon Hargrave was on the team. That's a big signing. It matters a lot. Really establishing my credibility here, but it's a really good chance to kind of take stock of the entire depth chart and you see the holes, you see the strengths. And I have to say, going into the NFC East, I thought there was a pretty clear ranking in terms of you got two halves, really, the Cowboys and Eagles, and then the Giants and Skins in the bottom. And I still think that's true, but I actually think all these teams might be a little bit more muddled than I thought going into it. So I'm excited to hear your take on all of them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that Dallas and Philadelphia are kind of firmly in that top two. I might be higher on Dallas than you are based on that, on what you said, but I think there's a clear hierarchy, and I think you can even kind of break it down into like the second half with the Giants and Washington to two parts, because I really do think Washington's offense is that bad, and I'm sure we'll get into it, but that just looks like such a bleak situation to me.
Interesting. I think I actually might be more optimistic about it than you, but my optimism resides on a lot of unknowns coming to fruition in that offense. I figure we should start with the team that you cover, the team that you know best, the team that is home to one Daniel Dimes. I don't remember. I threatened to change my name to Mina Dimes legally if something happened. I think it was if the Giants beat the Patriots, I said I would change my name to Mina Dimes, which was a bold move on Twitter, Charles. Really bold. Yeah. Fortunately, it didn't happen. So I did not have to change my name to Mina Dimes. But I'm here to talk about Dan Dimes with you and the Giants offense in general. And I want to start here because it's interesting. I kind of went back and thought through his performance last season in whole. And I did cover this during the season last year. Where I come down on him is I both think he was better than I expected and worse than he was portrayed.
Yeah, that's how I feel, because it's hard for me to think about Daniel Jones' performance last season without like muddying my thoughts on where I thought he was as a prospect coming out of Duke, because I thought that to take him 6th overall or even in the first round was just like such a crazy reach. And based on like on that, on what I thought of him as a prospect, like I thought of him more as like a day two, like borderline day three guy. Like he did outperform those expectations, but you know, if I was a Giants fan and trying to look at it objectively, like it's not a situation where I'm all in on Daniel Jones as the starting quarterback, because I think we might have talked about it during the season. But if you go back and you watch his tape or you look at numbers by Pro Football Focus, like there was really high potential for him to have well over 30 turnovers last season. When you look at one, all the fumbles that he had, some of them were his fault, some weren't his fault. You look at the interceptions, and then you look at the drop interceptions. He's honestly lucky that he didn't throw more than 20 interceptions, and the fumble issue was crazy. Like, I think that there's a question of, obviously, it, you know, it's kind of like a situation with where Lamar was to me in his rookie year, where you look at the amount of fumbles that Lamar had over the back half of those 8 games, and you're like, that rate is so high that there's no way that can continue in a drop to a second year. So I kind of expect Daniel Jones' fumble issues to correct themselves, but I kind of wonder what the ceiling of his, of what his ceiling is as a passer, because he plays like someone who has like this big arm and can fit into tight windows. But the reality of his skill set is that that's not really possible for him. So he plays like this gunslinger without having the physical attributes of one. And I think that that's going to be at least something that he really tones down as he moves forward in his career, or else he's just going to be this turnover machine that flames out pretty quick.
I actually wrote as a comp Jameis, which I think people would think is insane, maybe. But when I go back to what I said about how he was better than I expected, like Jameis is a lot better than I thought Danny Dimes was in college, right? Like that's not quite an insult in some ways. And I'm not saying that they're skill for skill necessarily, that they correspond perfectly. But I think your points about his aggression and playing like he has a huge arm, and sort of the lack of ball security at times really line up with my, like how I feel about his rookie season. I'm also not super worried about the fumbles so much as I am about the should be interceptions. However, I do think the should be interceptions stemmed from a place of over aggression and not like, holy crap, can this guy read the field? If that makes sense. Right. And which again, could be fixed. The things I thought, like I've always said he's athletic, and I think it'll be interesting to see if Jason Garrett's offense, which I want to ask you about in a second, leans on that more or less. I thought they should have leaned on it more last year. But I think he threw with a lot more touch than I expected, especially in sort of the intermediate area of the field. But you know, a lot of his good plays were pretty open, you know, it wasn't making like the most difficult throws. And I have some concerns. And of course he did all the rookie stuff, like, you know, holding on the ball way too long and making the offensive line look worse, but that's pretty standard. And, you know, by the way, the context matters. Like I think he has, for example, better weapons than Haskins did, but he didn't have them all together. Right. And I think that matters too, but I do worry. I wonder, I guess, whether or not he's going to take a step forward under, given the coaching change, because I know Giants fans seem to hate Pat Shurmur, and you can get at me about that and his offense. But in some ways, I kind of think he's a better fit for Shurmur than Jason Garrett.
Yeah, the Jason Garrett thing is so interesting to me, because he hasn't called plays or be at least been the primary play caller since I think the 2012 or the 2013 season, when Bill Callahan got the role because Jerry Jones was fed up with Jason's ability to kind of orchestrate the whole thing instead of just being the play caller. So with Garrett, it's almost like it's weird because you have this guy who's been around offense and been around the league for so long, but there's no real way to pinpoint exactly what this offense is going to look like. And I think that if you can kind of look at the Cowboys 2019 offense, and you know, there's still questions about how much that was Jason Garrett versus Kellen Moore as the season went along. But I think one thing that they did really well was at least get Dak Prescott involved in, you know, the running game. And they were really good at timing when they were going to call some of these zone replays or option plays where Dak has the choice to, you know, give the ball to Ezekiel Elliott or not. And I think that Daniel Jones can be someone that maybe you don't give it to him as frequently, but he's someone that can thrive in these situations where you're getting him on the move because you're asking him to think a little bit less and you're asking him to use his legs, which I think is something that can be a real positive for him. Now, one area that he does have to improve, and I think it was in the Cowboys game last year on Monday night where Daniel was running for a first down and for some reason decided that he was Cam Newton size and tried to bowl over two defenders for a first down on third down and ended up fumbling the ball. Like, you got to take away some of the recklessness of his games, but I think in theory, like, I like an offensive system for him that allows him to get on the move and get the ball out of his hands quickly so that he's not thinking about, you know, can I force that ball downfield? Because if he's thinking about if he can force the ball downfield, you know, his mind tells him that he can do it. And that's where you start to see some of those bad plays happen.
And he has a lot of skill players who should be quite helpful in that capacity, right? I mean, when you look at the skill group as a whole, obviously Saquon, Evan Engram, who was hurt, I want to say most of his starts, that might be wrong. Certainly a lot of them.
Yeah.
A player who was really promising, you know, earlier in his career. And then Sterling Shepard, Golden Tate, both kind of slot guys, and Darius Slayton, who I love. Like, that's one, a pretty freaking solid group, but two, I think it's a group of players that fits well into what you're describing. The problem, of course, is that they've not all been healthy at the same time. If they are all healthy, I kind of like it for Jones. And I gotta think this offensive line, which I want you to tell me who you think is starting where, because I pulled up the depth chart and I was kind of wondering, is Nate Solder, who was awful last year, going to stay at left tackle? Are they going to move Andrew Thomas, the number four overall pick, over there right away? Like, what are you hearing on that front? And do you expect that group, which was not good last year, to be better?
I expect the group to be better. I also do expect Nate Solder to start at left tackle just because, you know, his cap hit this year is about $12 million. And that's it's tough to put that on the bench and just kind of have that not doing anything for your team. I think he's also going to start because it's only a competition really for the starter at left tackle would be either be Andrew Thomas or Matt Peart, who are both rookies. So I think that Solder is going to get at least to start the season at left tackle. Whether he stays there, I think, is kind of up to his own level of play. And if it's the same as last year, I wouldn't be surprised if they just kind of pull the plug on that, because I think it's almost a guarantee that Solder is not the left tackle of the Giants in 2021. So if he starts to struggle and they decide to put Matt Peart in there or decide to slide Andrew Thomas over the left tackle, then I think that might be an avenue for him getting off the field, but he's going to start. And I think it's better than last year just because they have more depth and they have the upside, at least, of Andrew Thomas starting at right tackle is what I would guess. So you have Andrew Thomas at right tackle, Kevin Zeiler at right guard, Will Hernandez at left guard. I think that's a pretty solid trio. And if you can kind of mitigate whatever, you know, destruction comes from Nate Solder's side of the field, then it's a solid offensive line. I really like their upside as a run blocking group, because I think that's somewhere where they really struggled as Saquon is coming back from injury last year. And then they have injuries on the offensive line where, you know, if you go back to that game against the Jets, where they lost 34-27, they were down to their third string left tackle. So that's hopefully not a situation that they find themselves in this year. And even if they do get to a spot where, you know, Solder gets hurt or Thomas gets hurt, they put themselves in the better position to at least sustain quality offensive play through that, because, you know, you drafted Matt Peart, who I had not heard of before the draft, but I went back and watched his tape, and personally, I think he's actually pretty good and actually has, like, long-term starter potential. And Cameron Fleming, they signed him as a free agent from Dallas. So, like, that's better position than they were last year, where they had Eric Smith backing up, who had never played in an NFL game through his 4-year career up until the Jets game last year. And predictably, Saquon averaged 1 yard per carry in that game. And we all know he's a lot better than that. So that depth was big for them this year. And they also drafted Shane Lemieux, the guard from Oregon, to fill more guard depth in like the fifth round of the draft. So I wouldn't say that this is like a great offensive line, but it's definitely better than it was last year. And I think that if they can even get it to be like consistently league average, that's going to be
big. Yeah. They rank, well, first of all, you didn't think you were going to hear about the backup guards on the Media Kime show, but Charles McDonald covers the Giants, folks. I just pulled up they're 25th in adjusted line yards last year. Football Outsiders run blocking metrics. So suboptimal. Offensive line guys like Matt Pert. So I tend to just ask whenever there's like, I have a question about offensive linemen, I just ask like, four guys like Michael Jr., Jeff Schwartz, you know what I mean? And, trust their judgment. And I have heard good things about him. Tell me something good about the defense because, it's a problem. I'll say what I think is good. Run defense up front. Probably still good.
Yeah. That's about it. That's the only thing that I can, confirm that is good. And if they had a good run defense last year and we're still generally just an absolutely terrible defense. So
not a good way to build your defense, it turns out, focusing only on stopping the run.
Yeah. And they're that's where they're gonna be stuck again though this year. Like it's crazy to me that, you know, obviously I think that Dexter Lawrence is a good player and Dalvin Tomlinson in his role can be a good player, but it's just the issue with some of the drafting that Gettleman has done with the Giants is like, you're just not getting good value on those positions.
I'm so glad you said that because he finds good players. He just gets them like the wrong spot. It's like, it's interesting. He's a good talent evaluator.
So like you look at Dexter Lawrence. Yeah. He's not a bad talent evaluator. He just doesn't know when to take these guys, which has to be so frustrating for Giants fans. Like Dexter Lawrence, good player, had a really good rookie year, probably the second best rookie defensive lineman besides Ed Oliver, but you know, he's just not a good enough pass rusher to make a difference. Now you're stuck relying on, Lorenzo Carter, who's a third round pick, Ashane Zimenez, who was a third round pick. And you just kind of see like where Gettleman values guys and where it kind of hurts you when you actually go to play games in the football.
And of course there's the weird Leonard Williams trade, which they had to tag him to justify the trade. And he is a good run defender, which again, run defense is going to be good. But he is not worth that. And I was surprised, Charles, that they didn't sign a pass rusher. We did all these like offseason, where is this free agent going to go panels at ESPN? And everyone kept giving like Jadeveon Clowney, you know, whoever, Everson Griffin to the Giants. And they kind of just stood pat and they had money. So I was a little bit perplexed by that.
Yeah, it was weird to see them kind of just be okay with the pass rush that they had last season, or at least the edge rush, because when I look at this roster, I don't really see anyone that's going to, make a huge difference as a pass rusher. You know, Joe Judge comes from the Patriots and they haven't put too huge of an emphasis on edge rusher too. Mm-hmm. So maybe they can figure out a way to scheme up pressures and get home to the quarterback that way. But I think it's just going to be a situation again where you have quarterbacks that aren't really fazed by pressure in the pocket and you're still rolling out a pretty young secondary this year. And I think you could see some issues again. Like it's not a situation where they did enough up front to make you feel better about the secondary or that they did enough in the secondary to make you feel better about what they did up front. So confusing because like you said, they had all this money in free agency and they come away with a defense that still is not very impressive at all.
Let's end on an optimistic note. I don't think the secondary is going to be great, but I think there's like bright spots of interest. Now, cause again, I like their draft this year a lot. So let me walk back the value thing. I actually, Andrew Thomas, you know, I think I tweeted before the draft, is he going to be that player that everyone overthinks and lets slip, even though he's incredibly polished and good? And they did not let him slip. And I liked that they got him. Personally, I actually preferred that pick to Isaiah Simmons. I know that was kind of the divide between Giants fans. And then they got Xavier McKinney, safety, great value there. And at the, I think the beginning of the second round, right? And is such a nice compliment to Jabril Peppers. Just, you know, perfect skill sets blending together. You've got Julian Love, who I guess, well, so with DeAndre Baker, let me ask you that. I don't know what the status is of the DeAndre Baker case. Is he
playing? He's still on the team.
He's still on the team. Okay,
yeah, I would.
I
would assume unless like I thought he was going to get cut like that first week after the arrest, which kind of feels like 2 years ago at this point.
It really does.
But he's. Yeah.
Your girl was Googling Quentin Dunbar hearing date for quite a while. But for those who don't know, Dunbar and Baker were involved in that weird, like, alleged robbery situation at the beginning of quarantine. Anyways, so Baker's the first round pick last year, who was quite disappointing. But, you know, when you look at this group as a whole, I mentioned Julian Love, and of course, we asked where the money went. Well, it went to James Bradbury, overpay, but quality NFL player, in my opinion. I don't think they should have paid him, but I think he can play football well. So, when you look at that group as a whole, it's decent, actually, the secondary. So it's not, you know, a sure thing. There's some, I think, question marks there, obviously the Baker thing and everything, but, I think it could end up being a surprising strength for this team. It could.
Yeah. Yeah, they could. I'm really interested to see how they kind of start to play Xavier McKinney and Jabril Peppers together, because like you said, it's a good fit. There is a little bit of overlap with their skill sets, I think, but Jabril, he at least has the experience of playing linebacker. So if you want to put him into like a dime linebacker role when you get into those sets and have McKinney on the field, like it can work that way. But I'd like the idea of having like three versatile safeties with Julian Love, Jabril Peppers, and McKinney. Now you just kind of got to figure out how to roll them out in a useful way. And, you know, with Bradbury, I don't even think that was like the worst contract they gave out on defense this year. Like that Blake Martinez contract still a little.
Yeah. I kind of just skipped over the linebackers, Packers linebackers. Yeah. All right. This has been depressing. Let's talk about one of the upper tier teams. Let's talk about the Eagles. Your breath caught a little bit there.
The Eagles are just a team. I cannot figure out like if this team is going to be good.
Let's work it out together. This is going to be good. Then we can work it out together. All right. So let's talk about the offense. So again, when you do this exercise and you look at the depth chart and you look at the changes and you think through and if there's going to be schematic changes, which in the Eagles case, it was really weird, actually. Doug Peterson said like everyone was coming back, and then they got rid of Mike Groh and promoted Press Taylor to passing game coordinator and brought in Rich Scangarello from Denver, who's from the Shanahan tree. So there's some questions like, oh yeah, you know, is this going to change the offense at all? Doug Peterson's still calling the shots. When you look at Peterson last year, I know some Eagles fans were frustrated by the amount of early down runs and some of the ways they use Carson Wentz, but they were so injured, at wide receiver that I'm not sure how much we can make of that. My problem with the Eagles is like when I look at the talent on offense, we can talk about defense in a second. I'm not sure this team is better. I realize that sounds crazy given that they were playing like high school gym teachers at wide receiver by the end of the year. But I know everyone was really pumped about, I wanted them to take Jalen Reagor. I was pumped about that. But I think the loss of Brandon Brooks is devastating. We can talk about that. Mm-hmm. It's still unclear what's going on with Peters. I think they want to move on from him to Dillard. But I don't know. I don't think this skill group is full of sure. I still think there's a lot of uncertainty. You're counting on, you know, a rookie, you're counting on getting something out of Alshon Jeffrey, who is against all odds still on this team. You're counting on Jay-Jaw being Arcega-Whiteside being good, DeSean Jackson playing, I guess. So there's just a lot of your things you're counting on here.
Yeah, and the thing with the Eagles is so, especially the wide receiver core, when you look at the Eagles, if I were to just go up to like your average football fan and just say, hey, you know, this team is rolling out Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, and a first round pick and wide receiver. You're like, oh, okay, you know, that's not bad. But then you think about what happened last year. And Alshon Jeffrey and DeSean Jackson both missed a ton of time last year where, you know, you almost have to like rebuild what you're doing from the ground up when you're working with injuries, and you're doing it in the offseason where it's not like you've been able to go and work out with Carson Wentz on a consistent basis or have OTAs or anything like that. So that's a little bit of a question mark, you know, bringing back these two older veterans, and maybe it's going to take them a little bit longer to get back from their injuries. Maybe they'll be right in playing shape. I don't know. Jalen Reagor, I think he's a talented player, but rookie wide receivers don't always have the cleanest transition to the league. That could be either good or bad. I don't really know. And the rest of the guys are completely unproven. I mean, Arcega Whiteside didn't have a great rookie year last year, and now they're bringing over Marquise Goodwin from San Francisco. So I you want to like the group, then you think about how many question marks there actually are involved with like each individual player. And it's hard to really be confident on how it performs as a whole. Like I think even if you throw out like 80% Alshon and Deshaun, like that's better than what they had last year. But is it actually enough to, you know, make defenses scared? And like you can take those same questions to the offensive line. When you think of the Eagles offensive line, you generally think of that as a good group. But then you actually start to break down what's happened with the Brandon Brooks injury, Andre Dillard's performance from last year, which was, you know, by all measurable standards. Yeah, troubling to say the least, if you look at pretty much all measurable standards. And it just doesn't feel like as strong of an Eagles team that we've gotten used to over the past few years, even though like the big names are still there.
Wonder if they'll sign Larry Warford to replace Brandon Brooks. I was just kind of, I have the depth chart up and I'm looking at, you know, who's next man up. And, you know, they've got Matt Pryor. I saw some speculation that they might bring back Peters and move Dillard, which seems like, you know what, let the guy, you want your players playing the right position. But that seems like something that they could address with a veteran like Warford, who was, you know, pretty decent last year. You know, we didn't mention the tight ends, Zach Ertz and then Dallas Goedert, who just got sucker punched. What the heck was that? It's like one of the weirdest videos I've ever seen. It's interesting, right? Like the Eagles obviously run a ton of 12 personnel. We're weirdly less efficient passing out of 12 last year, but then super efficient running the ball. We also didn't mention Miles Sanders, who I think was quite good. Mm-hmm. And I'll be curious, but again, it's so hard to evaluate that offense last year because of the injuries. So I will be curious to see if that changes at all. I don't know. I guess my point about the offense is I think health, you know, if they can get better health of other wide receivers, obviously you get a benefit from that. But when I really look at the group as a whole for the reasons you laid out, I'm not as optimistic, not that they'll be bad, just that I don't think they're going to, we're not getting 2017 again, I feel. You know, and maybe that's something we will never get again from Carson Wentz, by the way, right? You know, who I like, and I think was better than his wide receivers, you know, made him to be look at times, obviously. I do think the defense is going to be better though. And so a lot of my optimism around this team, which finished fourth against the run last year and 16th against the pass, rests there because I really like the depth they added on the defensive line. You're hopefully going to get a healthy Malik Jackson. I like the aforementioned Hargrave signing. I think both of those guys will help Fletcher Cox return to form. You know, maybe he'll never, again, maybe he won't be 2017 Fletcher Cox, but I do think he's better than 2019 Fletcher Cox. Mm-hmm. You know, look, this defensive line is never going to be as deep as it was in 2017. That's like one of the deepest defensive lines we've seen in any Super Bowl, right? And that was kind of their whole strategy. But I think they've got a tremendous amount of talent there. I do, Charles, think it's kind of hilarious that they just punted altogether on linebacker, though.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you got a lot of stuff. They had a lot of holes to fill. And I think if you're just going to go defensive line and secondary, and we'll kind of figure out linebacker along the way, not a terrible strategy, but you know, I absolutely love that Javon Hargrave signed because when, like, coming into the league, I don't remember, I think it was South Carolina State, but like you watch his tape and it was just comical. Like this guy who's clearly an NFL 3 technique, just bullying up on, like FCS guys, and he blew up the combine and then he gets drafted to a system in Pittsburgh that just does not fit his strengths at all. I mean, this guy's not a two-gapping nose tackle, but he's athletic enough that he was able to make it work for him. But he's like a classic one-gap penetrator. I'm going to get up the field and wreak havoc. And if you can put that guy next to Fletcher Cox, I think, you know, Hargrave might not be a common household name, but I think he's going to have a lot of fans by the time the end of the season's up. And the secondary, it's kind of like this, it's kind of like this, the receiver core to me, where you have a lot of moving parts and some names that you recognize that we've seen be good in the past with Darius Slay and Nickel Robey Coleman and, Rodney McLeod, even though it's been a few years since Rodney McLeod has put together like a consistent season. But then you also have Jalen Mills moving to strong safety for the first time, and, you know, Avonte Maddox stepping into a larger role. Sidney Jones is still a question mark at this point in his career. It's like you see the names and you want to be all in on it and you think more about it. And it's like, I know Darius Slay is good, and I know Nickel Robey Coleman as a slot cornerback can be good, but that's really all I know for sure about this Eagles team. And even last year, Darius Slay is coming off, you know, one of the worst years of his career. So you have to ask the question, is this a sign of him getting older, or is this a sign of him just having a bad season? Because that happens to a cornerback. So I know I like the defensive line. I like a couple pieces in the secondary, but it's just kind of hard to figure out, will this click immediately? And if it doesn't click immediately, how long does it take for it to click? Because, you know, the offense, they're going to have some chemistry issues too. So it's right, like this whole team, you see the names, but you don't know how the parts are fully going to mesh together yet.
That's a great point about the secondary in particular, right? Because when you throw Slay into the mix, I think it raises a lot of questions about what kind of defense Jim Schwartz is going to put together. Are they going to play a lot more man, for example, right? Which is sort of Slay's calling card. And the whole defense, I mean, I know Eagles fans had a lot of complaints about Jim Schwartz's defense, but again, that's also kind of similar to the offense. I think he's really had to work around his corners in a lot of cases, and maybe hasn't done a good job. And now they've just got bodies, as you mentioned. And it's a real question as to how those bodies are going to fit together outside of Slay and Robey Coleman. I cannot believe they signed him for $1 million. I think that's like the best signing of the offseason, frankly. He's an excellent nickel corner, and at that value, it's incredible. But yeah, Jalen Mills playing safety for the first time. Sure. I actually thought about this, when the Jamal Adams thing came up and he put them on the list, because the Eagles actually struck me as the perfect fit for Adams. I don't think like it makes sense from a contractual trade standpoint, right? The amount of draft picks they have to give up, but just from a pure football standpoint, I was like, that is the missing piece, right? With Jenkins gone. And the run defense, which was very good last year, I think is also going to suffer, with Jenkins gone. But I think the combination of that defensive line, which I think they're going to be able to get so much interior pressure from Hargrave, you mentioned Jackson, Cox, maybe the best in the league, you know, and some people wanted them to focus on the edge rush a little bit. But I think the combination of that line and then the Slay's sensible ability to kind of tilt the field, I think improvement could be in the cards. Wow, what a strong take from me. Let's end this segment with that. Improvement could be in the cards, Eagles fans. You're really like talking. I'm like, yeah, you know, this team has a shot. And then by the end, I'm like, no, they suck. Every time after talking to you. The heck, Charles? I was like so optimistic. Let's take a couple questions before we do the final two teams.
Question. Question. Lenny, for your thoughts.
All right, so we're only going to take two questions today. I thank you all, as always, by the way, for leaving such delightful questions in my iTunes reviews. Because one of the questions is really detailed. The less detailed question is from MDD1776. I hope that's not something weird. What team should be most concerned that their head coach has had more alone time to strategize? I lean the Jets for football reasons, but I'm worried about Gruden alone on an empty strip. Such a good question. Such a good question.
I think I'll take my own team, the Atlanta Falcons. Yeah, it's still a little hard for me to publicly claim them still, but the Dan Quinn having time to strategize for, you know, in the dark by himself for months at a time scares me a little bit, especially because I saw how he was calling plays last year for the first half of the season. So I'll go with the Falcons. Like, I don't want to see any more sticks defense. And I think that's what could be concocted over the past few months.
Is that done? Is Morris calling plays from here on out? Are they?
Yeah, been, okay. He is.
So you basically don't want him to take that back. That's a good one. That's a really good one. I appreciate that. So Matt Patricia by himself feels like a problem. I feel like Nagy, I like Nagy, but I feel like he's got to be having a weird off season. I'll go Adam Gase. I'll go Gase. You know, I think that our guy had it right. Okay, here's a really long question. Mike on Pat leave. This is a very long question. Question relating to the X-Men intro. First of all, do you watch X-Men, the animated series?
No.
Oh my God. I didn't even, I wish I had asked you this before. All right. So it's probably the best television show in the history of television, but there's an intro. And Mike says, my favorite part of the cartoon was always the end of the intro where all the main X-Men and the main villains line up and clash. If this were the NFL, who would it be? Offensive players versus defensive players makes sense, but you could also do AFC versus NFC. I'll do offense versus defense. I watched it again and can confirm there were 8 bad guys, including Magneto flying above, against 7 X-Men, including Professor X. A good life lesson. Would love to know how you see this going down for the NFL in 2020. Mike, thank you so much for this incredible question. Basically we're just doing, you could say we're just doing all pros really, but I want, like, if you were to watch and so you get to choose 8 offensive players versus 7 defensive players, who would you choose?
Like, are we to fight for the safety of the world?
Just
like a superhero scale?
This is like a Pro Bowl, but one where they actually have to try.
Oh, okay. Lamar Jackson, Saquon Barkley.
Slow it down. You got Lamar. So we're doing 8 offense. Saquon.
Yeah. Julio Jones, of course.
Julio.
Tyreek Hill.
Hmm.
Travis Kelce.
Over Kittle?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting choice. I'll do the defense.
And... Wait, how many players is that? 5?
You just said
4. 4.
Right? Or wait.
I said, no, Barkley, Lamar, Saquon,
Julio.
That was 5.
Okay, my bad.
So my 6th player is going to be Odell. Then we'll get Quentin Nelson and Zach Martin to block out in front of everybody.
Yeah, you need a couple offensive linemen, so yeah, I just respect that. Wow. The lack of respect for Michael Thomas.
You know, you're talking to a Falcons fan, so I don't know why you're still talking about it.
I'm not trying to have this Michael Thomas debate on this podcast. All right, I get the defense. So obviously Aaron Donald, first and foremost, start there. Khalil Mack. I know that some people wouldn't have him number one, but I just feel like if I'm going into battle, that's who I want, Khalil Mack. Bobby Wagner. Cameron Jordan. Which safeties do I? Oh, I got some corners. Stephon Gilmore and Tre'Davious. Oh, I need a safety. Whew, it's actually pretty tough.
Yeah. Can you only get 7?
I know. Yeah. Such an offense focused league. God, who do you think is the best safety in the NFL right now? This is the debate. I could build an offense with just 2 cornerbacks and screw safety. Oh, it's not Jamal Adams. It's funny, we've been talking about Jamal Adams, and I'm like, is he?
I was about to say, do you want to throw him there?
Or
Derwin?
I'm gonna put the Honey Badger just because I think he's like the leader. He's the heart of my squad.
It's a good choice.
Yeah, I know people would disapprove, but I feel like he's a good fit. Let's do Washington next instead of Dallas. I feel like Washington always gets, whenever I do podcasts like this, it's always like, oh shoot, we got to do Washington. All right, you know, a few minutes left. Let's give them the time they deserve. And let's start by talking about that offense, because you and I at the beginning of the show, we kind of, you know, we clashed a little bit. You said they're going to be icky. I don't know if that was your exact word, but that's how it sounded. And I think there's some, let's start, well, we should probably start with Haskins, right? So you had a first front row seat to a lot of Dwayne Haskins, and you saw 2 very different performances. I mean, Haskins really was awful for 4 games and then looked really promising for 3.
Yeah,
maybe really promising strong.
No. I don't. I think in those last two games before he got hurt, that, you know, you say end of his season, but there's only like six quarters left in the whole season anyway. So I think it's not as big a deal as it seems. But yeah, I thought in those last two games, Haskins was really promising, and then there's a lot of crap up until you get to that point. Now I don't think that his play was always as bad as his numbers were, because, you know, for example, like if you go back and watch the game against the Jets, I really didn't think he performed that badly, because you had there was like a 70-yard perfect throw with Terry McLaurin that came back for a penalty, and then
that was perfect.
It was great. And then you have like you see times like where it's clicking for him and he's getting the ball out on time and he's accurate. And I do think he's a pretty good thrower. Like that, where he gets stuck is still where he's got to run, and it's just not happening for him. So it's like Haskins is so weird to me, because like you see the moments where, and maybe it's just him being a rookie, like you see the moments where it's clicking and he's getting the ball out on time. Like those final two games, he looked like a franchise quarterback. You know, he's throwing the ball downfield, he's throwing it accurately, he's throwing it on times. And then you have moments where it's like there's a cinder block in his head and it's taking him a long time to figure out what's going on the field. And he's still throwing the ball and it's coming out late and it's getting intercepted or it's getting knocked down or he's just missing entirely. And, you know, it's just kind of hard to figure out in such a small sample size which guy he's going to be moving forward. You know, is it the last two games? Is it the first couple? Is it somewhere in between? But I feel okay about, you know, moving forward with him as a starting quarterback, at least for another year. Like, I think he showed enough to not have for Washington to not have been rumored to take like Tua second overall.
Well, like, I thought that was the rumor, right? Whereas like next year is looking like a pretty good quarterback draft. And you got to think if Haskins struggles in this new era in a post Josh Rosen world, Washington will be one of the teams that will be rumored, you know, to be moving on. Small sample size, I think, is the right word, because the problem with Haskins was he had a small sample size before he got to the NFL, right? And that was the ding on him. And I think that sort of manifested itself, because he's not an incredible athlete and like an electric playmaker. He's not the guy where if his plan doesn't work out, he's going to find a way to make something happen. Whereas sometimes you see, like, honestly, Daniel Jones at times, certain rookies, quarterbacks, you know, because they're often mentally they're not quite there, right? They hold the ball too long. They're not really good at getting to their secondary, whatever. And if you can lean on your legs, I think sometimes you can compensate for that. I don't think Haskins has that ability. You know, he gets in college. We saw a guy who, great arm, by the way, super strong arm too. When he gets the ball out quickly and he's got the offense in a rhythm, he is really, really good. But you know, that's something that can take a little bit of time. And I mean, he was put in a terrible situation coming in, you know, when Keenan was hurt, and it was some tough games. And if I'm a Washington fan, my hope is that, you know, what you saw at the end of the season is the quarterback he can consistently be. And I do think he has that ability. I do think he was really, really bad before that. Although I agree with you, maybe not quite as bad as it seemed. The problem is, and this is why I imagine you're skeptical of the offense, there's just so many question marks around him. Now, I'll start at the top. I think the move from Callahan to Scott Turner is a big upgrade from what I saw in Carolina before, you know, when Scott Turner took over the offense for a few games. And I went back to my notes from that. And, you know, he was much, much, much more creative than what we saw in Washington, you know, using Curtis Samuel in particular out of the backfield, doing more pre-snap motion, more exotic stuff. I think what he said too about Haskins and sort of trying to give him more layups, it's appealing. And also, by the way, not running the ball as much on first and second down as Washington did. I think that's an upgrade. I think at receiver, obviously Terry McLaurin is awesome. There's otherwise kind of question marks. I really like the Antonio Gibson signing. I thought Steven Sims was better last year than, you know, you might have thought, but there's not, like, there's still, it's unclear to me who's playing tight end. And then finally, you know, they lost their left tackle. So, and then Darius Geis is a question mark. So I just see, I see a situation, Charles, in which all of this could be certainly better than what we saw those first four games last year. I really think so. But I also think it's just like a lot of murkiness.
Yeah, I just don't really see the optimism in this offense, like outside of the running back group. I do like the running backs, like Adrian Peterson, somehow still going. Darius Geis, like I think we all know if he can just stay healthy, like that's someone who has like not just good potential, but someone who has potential to be one of the better running backs in the league. And then Antonio Gibson, like you said, I mean, I've seen a little bit of his college tape. He just seems like the Swiss Army knife, like do it all kind of guy that maybe you can use him in the same way that Turner used Samuel last year. But man, like outside of that, it's like you don't want your running backs to be the best part of your offense. And I think that's where Washington is, because Terry McLaurin, stud. Beyond that, I really don't see anyone to be all that excited about. I know that Antonio Golden, he got comparisons to Calvin Johnson while simultaneously being like the 10th ranked wide receiver in the draft for some people. So maybe he's a guy that has, you know, unleashed potential. And then the offensive line is weird, because you have Brandon Scherff and Morgan Moses, who are Scherff's good. Morgan Moses is a quality starter in the league. And then the rest of the guys are just like, they're kind of whatever. Cornelius Lucas, he played in Chicago last year, and he looked good at right tackle and bad at left tackle in Chicago. Well, guess where he's playing in Washington? He's playing left tackle, replacing Trent Williams. Wes Schweitzer in Atlanta, he's like your ideal swing guard, where if you need to play him in a pinch for a game or two, you can survive that. But if you have to play him for a whole season, like that's going to be a real big area of weakness, I think, for Washington. It's just the offensive line, and they have so many unproven playmakers. Jeremy Sprinkles had some nice moments at tight end. Logan Thomas right now, I think, is projected to be the backup, and he entered the league as a quarterback a few years ago.
Yep. Yes, he was. He was in Buffalo. He was their backup.
their offense, to me, is like the whole theory that we've seen people in analytics talk about over the past couple of years, where you have this valuable pick with the second overall draft pick, and they pick Chase Young there. And when you look at this offense, it's so easy to make the case that they should have traded down from two, pick up some more picks, and then pump that offense with talent. If you're going to move forward with Dwayne Haskins as your quarterback and not pick Tua number two overall, which they didn't. And I think that what makes this Washington team so interesting to me is like you have that draft pick theory with you. It's like staring you right in the face, where you take Chase Young, a number two overall, it kind of ignore the offense until the later draft. And then you kind of sit back and get to watch and see how much does an edge defender, even when it's Chase Young, impact wins. Or is it more, or is it smarter to like invest in your offense? Well,
the hope in some ways is that you have the Niners outcome, right? But the difference being the Niners brought in Kyle Shanahan and then of course traded for Garoppolo. But the hope is all these draft picks on defense eventually add up to a unit that's unbelievably dominant, a unit that's wildly underperformed, right? By the way, now. Mm-hmm. I think coaching is going to make a big difference. I mean, I think, my friend Danny Kelly described Chase Young potentially as a force multiplier, kind of similarly to Bosa, where you've got all these, I think they have the most first round picks ever, right? On the defensive line, something obscene. And then you hope that combined with, I think, bringing in Jack Del Rio and Ron Rivera and switching schemes. And I imagine, I'm actually kind of surprised they haven't traded one or two of these guys, frankly, given the scheme change. But they're going from a 3-4 to a 4-3. The hope is you bring in Chase Young and, you know, you got Jonathan Allen on the inside, just getting that push. And then Young and Montez Sweat comes out of nowhere, freak athlete, and Ryan Kerrigan. Oh, you got Daron Payne also from the first round in the middle. And it's just a nightmare for opposing offenses. Now, again, that's just not, they've had a pretty good run defense. I don't have the numbers. Oh no, it's like weirdly bad. Sorry. right? It's I have the numbers somewhere, but in any case, they have not played up to expectations at all. But it's they really need them to, because there's so many question marks in the back.
Yeah, it's Washington's defensive line is weird because, like you said, when you look at it, you see Ryan Kerrigan, John Allen, Matt Inadeus, Deron Payne. Like, individually, we know all of these guys are capable football players, but like as a unit, they haven't really been able to put it together. And they're going to need to in a hurry this year. And I'm 100% positive that Chase Young will be like a difference maker that can put them over the top in terms of making that potential production into actualized production on the field. But, you know, that secondary is still has a long way to go. I think getting Kendall Fuller back can help some. But outside of that, I don't really see anyone on the secondary where you point out and you're like, all right, that guy can really help and make a difference in the secondary. It's really going to be up to the defensive line. And within that group of defensive linemen, more how good is Chase Young going to be immediately? Because, you know, if he steps in and he's Nick Bosa good, you know, that's a game changer for your, not just your entire defense, but your entire team. And even if he is that good, like you can even like whittle down Chase Young into a smaller problem. Even if he is like Nick Bosa level good as a rookie, how many wins does it add for Washington? And are they in the same position next year where they're have the number two overall pick coming off a year where they picked a defensive lineman in the first round of the draft? So
Or they do have the Arizona thing, Charles, right? Where they got their guy and then they're not good again. And they're like, well, we're going to get, you know, Trey Lance or whoever.
Right.
It's not outside the realm of, I mean, you know, the obviously it would be easier and better and all of that if that wasn't the case. But yeah, I mean, and like Landon Collins, you know, he is good at what he does. He's an excellent run defender, but you need better coverage alongside him. They did sign what's the name from Pittsburgh? Sean Davis. So maybe that'll help as well. But yeah, it's you know, a lot of question marks, I think, in that defense still. And I gotta say, I kind of have a lot of question marks about the Dallas defense. And I'm high on Dallas. I've got them winning the division. I've been weirdly become like an honorary member of Cowboys Twitter over the last, which is words I never thought would come out of my mouth, and I'm honestly sickened. But, and a lot of it is my Dak cheerleaderism. But this, again, when I went through the depth chart, I went through the Dallas defense, I found that I had a lot of questions, beginning with a really obvious one. Who is playing opposite DeMarcus Lawrence at edge rusher?
That's a great question, because I don't know how many Cowboys fans would be too excited about the prospect of another year of Tyrone Crawford playing defensive end, but I think that's where they are. That's kind of where they are right now. Alden Smith, like getting back into the league, is still one of the most fascinating things like I can remember. And this year has been so crazy that we kind of moved past it a little fast.
So crazy.
Somehow Alden Smith, maybe he can be that guy if he's like totally healthy and back to where he was, but he isn't playing so long that I wouldn't bet on that. You know, this defense has a lot of questions. Like Jalen Smith didn't play all that well last year. Leighton Van Der Esch coming off an injury. It really pains me to say this, but like as a whole team, like this Cowboys team is really giving off some 2016 Falcons vibes. The defense definitely has some question marks. It has some question marks for sure.
Don't do it to them.
If you look at the defense, you're like, hey, you know, if the offense is good, maybe DeMarcus Lawrence can make a couple plays for us to win a game, as you know, we just kind of keep our foot on the gas. And if Leighton Van Der Esch can be a weapon at linebacker, then we'll be okay. And I'm still trying to figure out who that guy is on defense, where you just kind of have like one guy who can be a slight difference maker each level of the defense while your offense just kind of puts up points on people.
I have so many thoughts about this, but you know, the other question I was going to have other than the pass rusher is, okay, what do we get out of Mike Nolan, right? Who hasn't been a defensive coordinator in like 7 years, but Most recently, and he's taking over for Rod Marinelli and Chris Richard. Most recently was a linebackers coach for the Chargers and then the Saints, who, you know, had a, I think he really thrived in that role and got a ton out of them the last couple of years and gives me hope that he can turn things around for Jalen Smith and Leighton Vander Esch, who of course was hurt, but, you know, even when he wasn't hurt, I think took a step back. And that's so important for this Cowboys defense because they actually finished first in pass rush win rate. I hate saying that phrase. And again, you know, we'll see, you know, that if they can hold up. But the problem with the defense was there were a number of problems with the defense. I think the secondary had issues too, which we can talk about under Chris Richard with that cover three scheme. But the linebackers really couldn't cover. Like they were getting roasted on short passes to, you know, running backs and little screens. And so I think if they can plug that up a little bit this year, that'll help a lot. Like losing Quinn kills. Robert Quinn had this like crazy outlier year, not outlier year, but like, you know, really, I don't think anyone expected him to be as good as he was last season. And I'll talk about that signing later, but, so I think it's reasonable to question, okay, well, then they added Gerald McCoy and Dontari Poe that hopefully they can shore up, you know, keep the run defense. But I think it's really going to come down to the linebackers. And then it's really going to come down to how these defensive backs are deployed. You know, something we've talked a lot about on this show is how that Seattle cover three scheme just kind of isn't working in the NFL anymore and was so predicated on the talent in that defense. And I think Dallas, we were like, oh yeah, turns out when you don't have Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, and Cam Chancellor, not as easy. And so I'll be very curious to see what Nolan does with this group, which is full of a lot of youngsters, right? I mean, Trevon Diggs might have to start right away.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember someone telling me that when Dan Quinn got to Atlanta, when he was, you know, teaching people, or teaching the players his scheme, like his teach tape was Earl Thomas and Bobby Wagner. He's like, oh, okay, just go be Earl Thomas then and we can make this scheme work. Like, it's kind of funny. Like, you know, sometimes you need the players to make it run too. But yeah, when was the last time that Mike Nolan even coached like a full-time defensive coordinator? Because, you know,
2014.
Yeah,
so it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a minute. So the secondary scares me more than anything else because I think you can get just enough out of Gerald McCoy, the Terry Poe, and I really do like that third round pick they made, Neville Gallimore. Like, I think he's a guy that just has sky high potential in terms of being like an impact pass rush and three technique. But the rest of it is just that secondary is really going to have to play itself out. And they could very easily be in a situation where they have Trevon Diggs playing a lot of snaps as a rookie. And I think he's a guy that it's going to take him a little bit of time to get acclimated to professional football. But the offense is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, they're just going to tread. I don't know. Like, okay, let's talk about the offense. Like, what concerns can one have? I guess, you know, obviously Travis Frederick retired. And there's still question marks about whether it's going to be one of the Connors. There's like four guys named Connor on this offensive line. It's very complicated. One of the two Connor McGoverns in the NFL, right? And then Joe Looney, who played a bit last year. So I think that's a question. I guess Tyron Smith wasn't dominant last year, but he's still really good. Also, Lyle Collins is freaking broken out. Zach Martin is still the best right guard in the NFL. Like, I'm not worried about this freaking offensive line. I'm not worried about Ezekiel Elliott, who gets the benefit from playing behind this offensive line. And I'm certainly not worried about this ridiculous wide receiver group. Like, do you have any concerns about this offense?
The only concern I would maybe have is like Connor Williams and Joe Looney connection at center and left guard. But yeah. The thing when people talk about Travis Frederick moving on, like, that's a big loss from like a quarterback center communication standpoint. But in terms of like his actual blocking, it's not like he had been playing like a Travis Frederick of the past. Not to say that he was bad, but it's not like that dominant level of center play that we're used to. So, and I'm a believer that you don't need like super duper elite offensive line play to get, you know, an offense in motion. So, you know, even if Tyron Smith isn't world beater, dominant Hercules left tackle that we've come to expect. Like, he's still very much a top 10 left tackle, and that's more than good enough. And then, like you said, Zach Martin, Lyle Collins. And I think an underrated move that the Cowboys made this year is they made an upgrade at tight end without actually adding anyone of note. Like, you, when you get rid of Jason Witten, who, you know, it just wasn't working. It wasn't working. Just didn't really have what it takes for a 40-year-old tight end. I'm actually really big on Blake Jarwin. Like, I think, like, when you watch him play, I haven't looked at his stats or anything, but, like, when you watch him play, just the way that he moves with and without the football, like, I think he can be a really dynamic receiving threat. And then you pair him with, you know, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup. I just don't see, like, beyond catastrophic injury to Dak Prescott, I don't see how this offense isn't, like, top six at least.
I like Blake Jarwin because he once liked a tweet I wrote that said, has anyone ever had a name that's more Cowboys tight end sounding than Blake Jarwin? you know who likes him a lot? Nate Tice, friend of the show. Blake Jarwin guy. I think health is a dumb thing to say, but they were really healthy last year, right? So health could be an issue. I mean, by the way, news break, Dak Prescott signed his franchise tag. So maybe if he doesn't get a deal done, if he doesn't get a deal done, he's going to be awesome next year because he's going to be playing for his next contract. I'm obviously very high on Dak. I've talked about it a lot on this show, so we don't have to do the whole Dak thing. I'm all in on this Cowboys offense. Another year under Kellen Moore too, right? Talked about the advantage of moving on from Witten to Jarwin, not doing anything there. The fact that they didn't fire Kellen Moore, I think, is great. because we still really don't know what we're getting out of Mike McCarthy. I know, you know, he went on a vision quest to PFF and all that stuff and was hilariously close to the camera during the draft and has been and had a great draft, although it wasn't him. But we just don't know, you know, because this is funny, right? Because at the end of the time in Green Bay, it was constantly like, is it McCarthy? Is it Rodgers? And I actually think Mike McCarthy's time away from football helped his reputation in a way. So this could be a beautiful marriage between him and Kellen Moore, an incredible synthesis of minds. Or you could start hearing stories that are like, Mike McCarthy really thinks Kellen Moore needs to run the ball more on early down. I don't know, whatever. So we'll see. And by the way, I'm not saying Kellen Moore was this, like, you know, Shanahanian god last year. I think he made his share of mistakes too. You know, he did some of the things we dorks like, fair amount of play action and, preset motion, all that stuff. But, he did some dumb stuff too. So
yeah,
we'll see.
But I think with Kellen Moore, what makes me so excited about that is, like, obviously they have the players to run just about any offense, but if you're going to tell me that that's his first season calling plays in the NFL, that's really, really impressive with mistakes and all to run an offense that leads the league in yards per play by a comfortable distance, because they were first with 6.5 yards per play. And I think the Chiefs were second with 6.2. So if you can get that with your first year, someone calling plays, I would be so pumped about what year two can look like if you can just kind of clean up some of the mistakes. And they went through a lulls this year, especially towards the end of the season, where they just couldn't put points on the board. But you got Kellen Moore in year two. This offense, I mean, I think I really do believe the sky's the limit. And like I said, if you can just get enough playmaking out of the defense, like just enough to force some turnovers or get some sacks on high leverage third downs, this to me looks like a Super Bowl contender.
I forgot the thing that I, again, forgot until I did this exercise, which is they hired John Fassel, right? This team, which was terrible at special teams last year, finished 30th, went out and hired one of the best special teams coaches in football from the Rams. So that, you know, you talk about like kind of little victories around the edges. And it's not that little, but that's kind of thing that gets overlooked when we kind of look at offseason activity, but could end up being, I think, a big, big difference. And it's one reason why I have picked the Dallas Cowboys to win the division. As always, going to end with a few questions for our friend Charles.
And now it's time for Dinks and Dunks. I'm getting paid for this, right?
Charles, question number one.
Nina.
You cover the Jets. I didn't ask you about the Jets, but I'm going to ask you about the Jets now. Specifically, Sam Darnold. If he doesn't break out this season, do you think it's over for our boy, Sam Darnold?
No, I don't. And Sam is so conflicting for me because you look at the data and the data says they should already be moving on. Like the data says that this is over, but then you watch him play and I just don't think like he's anywhere close to as bad as his stats say. Like he's one of those guys where I don't think when you look at the numbers, it does him any justice whatsoever. Cause their offensive line was terrible. They had one playmaker really in Robbie Anderson who was pretty much hot and cold until like the last four games of the season. Like you look at his ability to make plays out of structure. You look at his ability to make plays in the pocket when things are breaking down. I think he's so talented. And you look at how young he is too. Sam Darnold. He's not done even if he's bad this year. I think he's talented enough that you got to give him another chance with another coach and better support in the staff. I'm still in on Sam. And it's funny because I didn't like Sam coming out of USC, but the more I watch him in the NFL, I've really grown to like his game.
You know that, I forget, I think it was an Eagles fan who tweeted like a video of Carson Wentz and they were like, only two players in the NFL can make this throw, Carson Wentz and Patrick Mahomes. Did I get that right? I don't know. Football Twitter had a field day with it. It was funny because I was watching that throw. I was thinking to myself, I've seen Sam Darnold make that throw.
I've seen him make it a few times. Like, there was a throw he had last year versus Steelers for a touchdown to Robbie Anderson. I'm like, man, this kid, he's got skills.
He can make all the throws.
I just don't know if the Jets are the right situation for him to succeed or really just about any quarterback.
Or anyone. Question two. I've been asking everyone for a quarantine content recommendation. I just started the show Broadchurch. What's yours?
I have been rewatching, or not rewatching, but watching Better Call Saul. That's been fun, but I want to talk about an infuriating content situation that I watched. Have you seen the show called Too Hot to Handle on Netflix?
Charles, I am so glad you brought up Too Hot to Handle because of course I've seen it. How far along are you?
I've seen the whole season.
Okay, great.
Did you watch
the reunion episode? I wouldn't recommend it. It's not good.
I did not watch the reunion episode, but I watched that show. And for people who don't know, it's basically you have like all these hot singles together on an island and they get so there's a $100,000 cash prize.
Which is, by the way, it's so confusing at the beginning how much money it is, right? The whole time I thought it was $100,000,
right.
Or not the whole time, but at first. And then you're like, really? You're doing all this for like $3,000,
Yeah. So every time that you hook up or you kiss, you lose money off that $100,000 prize. And I know that we're in an era right now, or the past few weeks, like where we are trying to defund police, but we need police officers on that show specifically to smack sense into people. Like, you cannot tell me that you're going to kiss this girl to lose $3,000 or, you know, hook up with someone to lose $15,000 off a $10,000 prize. It's like, it's maddening to me, but it was so frustrating that I had to keep watching the entire show.
It's so dumb and the people are so dumb. It's like infuriating to watch, but I really enjoyed it. I gotta say, I'm bummed. None of them are together anymore too. So love is not real.
Oh, how surprising is that?
I know, Sharon and Rhonda.
Yeah, there was the one bigger guy on the show who would sit there and judge everyone and to get money docked off the total.
Kells.
That was my spirit animal. Kells, yes.
A girl went into a shower with him and he turned her down. The quote unquote.
I know. I was like,
top girl.
That's my man.
All right, question three. If there's no NFL season, what sport could you see yourself really getting into?
NASCAR. After what we saw, I don't know if NASCAR runs during the fall, but after what we saw with Bubba Wallace and NASCAR the other day, that was kind of cool. And there aren't really any black people besides Bubba Wallace racing. So I'll just become a huge Bubba Wallace fan and turn to.
Yeah, I'm a big fan now of Chase Elliott because he looks like me, which is the most narcissistic thing. But I did that gender app where it changes your gender. And I got him, and I didn't get him. I got myself, right? A male Mina, but many people I mentioned were like, you look like this dude, Chase Elliott. Then I did the reverse with the app. I did Chase Elliott's face and ran it through the woman filter, and he looks like your girl. So we're basically the same person, I guess. Question four, who's a team that you're more positive about than most?
I think the Carolina Panthers is one team because I know that there are a lot of Panthers fans that think this team might be bad enough to get the first pick next year for Trevor Lawrence, but I don't see that really. I don't think it's a good team, but I think we have Teddy Bridgewater plus the weapons like Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, Curtis Samuel, Christian McCaffrey. I'm pretty bullish on Ian Thomas, the tight end too. I think when you just have that, not like it's an elite group of guys, but it's enough to get, you know, 6 or 7 wins and leave you stuck in purgatory for a couple of years. So I think the Panthers might be a team that I might be a little bit higher on than most people.
Yeah, that was one. I don't know if you caught the NFC South, and I found myself very intrigued by elements of that team as well. I think that division is going to be really good, by the way. Definitely one of the better divisions. As always, final question comes from Lenny. Charles, I did not write this. I'm just passing it along from Lenny. So, you know, no big deal. Lenny just wants to know how it feels to be left out of every group text because you have an Android.
It hurts me a little bit, but I'm blessed by the fact knowing that people can't just randomly FaceTime me. So it's like a win-loss situation.
That's actually kind of true.
My friends, they get mad at me constantly because the group chats don't go through in the same way, and they get mad. I'll sometimes in group chats, like, you know, when you get an Android and someone does like an emoji on the thing, you get so-and-so laughed at this message, and then I'll respond with laughed at quotes, laughed at that message, and they get really mad that I like manually typed out that I'm laughing at a certain message. So, you know, I've received my fair share of bullying, but it's just too convenient at this point, so I will stand strong and I won't.
Bullying, yeah. Mini Kimes laughed at Charles McDonald.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.